Monday evening to everybody. I am your host of the Monday Night Kickoff, Charles Levi, a.k.a. Redfish Chuck. It's weird doing the show tonight after doing the Fishing Florida radio show on Saturday, because while I was doing that, I was able to hear myself in my headset, and now I'm talking and I don't hear myself in my headset, so I hope you guys hear me. Yeah, thanks, Rob. A little weird. We're going to get into all kinds of fun stuff and shenanigans this evening. But first things first, I'm going to say hello to my two brethren on the phone who joined me as always. I got the landing crew, Mark, the striped bass assassin, Wheeler. How you doing, buddy?
What's going on, man?
Nothing, man. Just chilling. And then I also have Mr. Rob, a bad back castivore.
Yes, sir.
The proud owner of a new pair of Costa Del Mar sunglasses.
Yes. Well, not yet, but we'll see. I got to say real quick, I'm sorry for not tuning in there on Saturday morning. I got up about 5:30. You know, I've been set my alarm for it and everything, and, you know, you were, so I get up and, you know, get the dog taken out and all that stuff, and I kind of was laying on the couch waiting for the, you know, waiting to call in, and I woke up at like 9:30 when you were texting me.
Yeah, no, that's cool, man. It's all right. I just got a hold of Steve Chapman. I told him to revoke your free pair of Costa certificate. So, just kidding, man. I'm just kidding. Rob was randomly chosen as the Costa Del Mar free pair of Costa Del Mar recipient during the Fishing Florida radio show. I drew his number out of a bag, and I don't know how in the world that would have ever worked. Worked out, but it did. So there you go. Had a great time, man. I got to see how the professionals do it, and it was pretty cool. It was a fun experience. The shenanigans that take place in the studio with Steve Chapman and Captain Mike Ortego and Boudreaux. It's interesting. If you guys ever have, or if you guys are ever up at Ugly 30 in the morning on Saturday, whether you're up in New England or you're down here in Florida, you can check it out. It's on 740thegame.com. You can listen to it live. Sorry, my boy's in my room with me and he's playing with one of his toys, so it might be a little bit of background noise. But no, it was a lot of fun. We talked about kayaking, we talked about all kinds of things. So, and while we're doing the show live in the studio, we're all watching SportsCenter, so it was pretty cool. But speaking of SportsCenter, real quick, the UFC moment of the week. We kind of talked about it on my Facebook page a little bit. If any of you guys are into UFC, it was probably one of the best UFC fights that, or cards that I've seen in a long time. I know it's not a UFC show, but wow, that's all I got to say. Mark, I know Mark's a fan, and a couple other guys in here are fans, so Trey's pissed. So,
every UFC fight for the past year and a half I've bought, you know. And you know when the UFC fight is usually on the block because you can hear me screaming and yelling and, you know, having a good old time. But Saturday, I was like, you know what? It's John, you know, it's Jones. He's going to, you know, absolutely tear into this dude. And Mir has been looking good, and the undercard isn't that great. You know, whatever. Yeah, and then I see the post from you on Facebook. You know, Jones just, you know, ripped his head off, and, you know, Mir just broke little Nug's arm. I'm like, gee, man, come on.
Yeah, dude literally got his arm broken. That was kind of crazy. You know, I got a whole...
Not broken. Ripped.
Yeah.
Rotated and popped.
Yeah, it was nasty. But anyway, so let's see. Wheeler cannot fight this way out of fight his way out of a paper bag. Wow, dude, you just got owned by Lozier.
Oh man.
So let's see. A couple of things I want to get to real quick. February 10th through the 12th. I know it's a little ways away, but February 10th through the 12th, the Old Florida Outdoor Festival in Apopka, Florida, is taking place. It's going to be quite the extravaganza. It happens to be the weekend prior to our boondoggle, which will be down in Chokoloskee, Florida. So if anybody wants to make an extended vacation out of their boondoggle adventure, that might be something really cool to check out. They're going to have all kinds of things. They're going to have skeet shooting demonstrations. There's going to be the ESPN water dogs, those dogs that like jump off the end of docks real far or whatever. They're going to be there. Yeah, Swamp Brothers, I guess, are going to be there from the Discovery Channel. They're going to have a whole kids' corner for like a casting contest, minnow catching, just all kinds of fun stuff. And then the angling activities, there'll be demonstrations put on by like the Watts brothers and Patrick Sabeel and a bunch of others. I know the guys from DOA are going to be there. So, and to top it all off, there's two country concerts, country music concerts that are going to be taking place. Tracy Lawrence is going to be one of the main guys, and then there's another gentleman who's scheduled to be there, but I don't remember his name. Tracy Lawrence and Jake Owens. Thanks, Steve. They're going to be there, so it'll be good. They're going to have a whole kayaking, paddling section, and you know all kinds of craziness. So they're expecting a pretty big number of folks out there. It should be a lot of fun. Barbecue. Yeah, all kinds of cool stuff. So check that out. That's the Old Florida Outdoor Festival in Apopka, February 10th through the 12th. So, you know, it's they've got a Facebook page. You can look them up if you're on Facebook, like their little page and get all the up-to-date info on what's going on. Let's see, what else is going on? Nothing. That's it. There's really nothing else going on that I can think of. Let's see. Sunday is – I'm planning a trip today. And I've been planning a trip all day long today. But let's see. Oh, cool. Steve Chapman in the chat room just said he's going to get me some tickets some way to give away if anybody wants them. So I'll be able to maybe do that on the show here. That'd be cool. Thanks, Steve. I've been planning a trip pretty much for the last week and a half to go do some fishing this weekend. Sunday is my birthday, and I told my wife the only thing I want for my birthday is to be able to shut off the cell phone and be gone for an entire day. I don't want anybody calling me. I don't want anybody bothering me. I just want to go and put hooks in fish's mouths. That's it. So that brings me to my topic of the evening, which would be what do you bring with you for a wintertime trip, or how do you plan for a wintertime trip as opposed to a spring or summer trip, with the exception of the obvious things like a jacket or, you know, your frog togs or whatever else that, you know, you might have that you would use because it's cold outside. And since I haven't introduced Mr. Becker to the panel yet, I'm going to start with Mr. Becker. How are you, sir?
I am well, thank you. How are you?
I am fantastic. So what do you do to prepare yourself for a, I guess we can call Florida's winter, a winter fishing extravaganza? Is there anything special that you do, or anything special you take with you besides the obvious, like the clothing?
Now, most of the places I fish are not clothing optional. So I definitely always bring the clothing.
Wow.
Although I haven't been over to that coast yet, so it could be an entirely different fishery. I'm not entirely sure, but
it is actually. It is.
We shall see, I guess. And they always say about the Atlantic coast, but be that as it may, from what I'm learning down here, and as I'm learning every time I go out on the Gulf Coast, wintertime is darker and slower. So I'm shifting out a lot of the a lot of the gold paddle tails and the clear and translucent light colored paddle tails or darts, and throwing in some of the golden brim exude gold darts, different exude paddle tails, and any other manufacturers I happen to have. Also looking at downsizing leaders. I might have had 30 or 40 pound fluorocarbon leaders on a couple of the rods from going up to Cedar Key for Big Uglies, looking for a black drum. That's not going to cut it down here in the wintertime, so I'm cutting back to 20 or even 17 pound fluoro leaders and getting them all swapped out and just planning to fish slower. A lot of the summertime stuff is enticing the strikes, and now it seems like it's worth it's just convincing the fish that it's worth the effort to go get whatever it is that I'm retrieving and throw it at them. So
yeah, that's a good point. And I bring her up quite often on my shows, but the trout slayer herself, Miss D. Kaminsky, has done it yet again. She went fishing the other day with Vicky in an undisclosed location that they won't tell me about. I'm pretty upset about it. And in the rain, and they still managed to catch 20 plus inch trout on top waters. And wow. But that's exactly what they told me. They said that everything that they've had to do has had to have been slowed down. Even the top water, your cadence on the surface is much slower than what we were doing in the spring. And so that reflects well. What about you, Rob? I mean, is there anything that you do that's, a little bit different or things that you might bring with you? Of course, you're going to wear clothing on your coast because you have to, but,
Well, I'm allergic to the cold, Chuck. Everybody knows that. So outside of some waders and staying dry clothing stuff, Mr. Becker's right. The reason you want to lighten up on your leader material a little bit is in the wintertime over here, and I'm sure it's the same thing over on that coast too, the water clarity, the water tends to clean up kind of a bit. So anything that you can do to lighten it up, you want to use lighter jig heads as well, because fishing slow is very, very important, because the fish slow down too. I'm not saying like right now, water temperature over the weekend here was 62. So I don't know if it's really, we probably got about another 5 or 6 degrees before you really got to start shutting it down, but slowing your presentation down. Fish get cold, they get lethargic when it gets a little bit on the cooler side. Color-wise, I don't really change up colors too much. I don't switch too many. I usually, in any situation, I have light-colored ones, dark-colored ones, and natural color, I don't know. I can't really think of too much other stuff that I would think to change in the wintertime outside of clothing and staying dry and staying warm. Because, I always tell people, they're like, oh, you're so lucky you get to fish in the wintertime. And I'm like, man, come down here and live for a little while and then get out on the water when it's like, 50 degrees out and nice little breezes blowing and all that stuff. That's no fun.
Yeah, well, I almost forgot the most important story of the evening for me from my show. Many of you may have seen it. I'm going to get to you in a second, Mark. Many of you may have seen it on my Facebook page, but I am a proud father. Friday evening, I got my son and my wife, both my kids and my wife in the truck, and we rode out to Handler Fish and Supply, and I had to stop in there for a second to pick up my wife's boat, which is a Native Ultimate. And we left there, we're on our way back home, and I looked over on the side of the road, and I was like, man, that looks fishy. I told my wife, I said, I'm going to go catch Trey's first redfish. So we launched the kayak, and my wife patiently sat in the truck waiting alongside a 528 and with my one-year-old, yeah. And we paddled maybe, well, we, not we, Daddy paddled, maybe, I don't know, a couple hundred yards away from the truck, and I saw my first set of tails, and made a cast for him, and handed him the rod, and told him, just reel, buddy, and he reeled, and reeled, and reeled, and reeled, and reeled. Well, the bait came close enough to the tails, where one of the tails dropped and pushed awake, and picked up the soft plastic, and took off with it, ran, took a bunch of line, and turned around and buzzed right back at us again, and I tried to allow him to kind of do it all on his own, and you know, he had he just doesn't have the coordination yet to know that, all right, you need to, like, you know, reel a lot faster when the fish comes at you. Then again, he isn't even 3 years old yet, so we lost that one. He ended up throwing the hook, and you know, no worries, we still had about a good 20-25 minutes left of daylight, and we paddled on down past that spot, and I found another group of tails working pretty hard, and I threw in there for him, and handed him the rod, same thing. He just reeled it. Line comes tight, you know, fish is hooked up. I reach up in front of him. I kind of grab the rod and pull it away from him for a second, set the hook real hard, and hand him the rod back and slid him back between my legs because he was sitting up in front of me, and he reeled the fish in all by himself, man. So, so now, to recap, my son, who's not three yet, has already caught speckled trout on fly, speckled trout on spin, brim and bass, and a tarpon on fly, and a redfish. So, yeah, I'm a very, very proud papa. And the whole ride home, the whole ride home, he just kept telling me, he's like, Daddy, I did all by myself. I'm like, yeah, you did. He's like, I caught a redfish all by myself. But the best part about it was right before we put the fish back, he's like, I eat it? I'm like, yeah, I mean, we can eat it if you want to. He's the lower end of the slot. We can eat him, sure. And I said, do you want to take him home and eat him? And he goes, no. So, So I put him back. And on the way back to the truck, he was like, Daddy, we eat it? I'm like, no, buddy, I said, we put him back. You know, he's gone. He's swimming away. He's like, oh. I'm like, but we can have fish sticks when we get home. He's like, fish sticks? He's like, Daddy, we have redfish fish sticks? I'm like, sure, whatever. So, yeah, it was super awesome, man. I mean,
put a lot of you guys. Ketchup dot.
Yeah.
Put a little
yeah.
ketchup dot, like, right on each fish stick. There you go, redfish fish sticks.
Yeah, a lot of you guys know I've been kind of down in the dumps for a while, and it's that was definitely a very uplifting moment for me, and something that I'll surely will never forget. But anyhow, going back to the topic at hand, I'll stay with that for just a second. I use the paddle tail, which is, like most of you guys know, that's my go-to bait that I throw 99% of the time out of the year. I rigged that paddle tail weedless, as I always do, on a 3-0 hook. This brand happened to be Mission Fishing, and let's see, I mean, he reeled it super slow. He was fishing with a 2500 Stratic CI4, so it doesn't have a really quick line retrieve. So yeah, everything that's been said so far by our panel is you know, all true for what I saw. The thing that killed me about this particular little venture was on the way back to the truck, as the sun is sinking further and further out of sight, and it's getting darker and darker, more and more tails are popping up all around us, and I look over my shoulder, and the moon is just as full as it could be, and I'm like, ah, man, it was one of those nights, man, that if I had a little bit more time, I knew I could have just wore them out, but yeah, it started getting a little chilly, and I'm real excited about this winter, man. It's going to be good over here. But Mark, what do you fish in a different, completely different region than us up in West Virginia. I mean, I keep saying that, Virginia Beach. Sorry, but I don't know why I always mix that up. But in Virginia Beach, the water up there is like stupid cold. So what do you guys do like, do you bring anything different with you that you wouldn't normally bring with you on a typical fishing trip because it's the wintertime?
Besides the clothing, if it's saltwater, you know, we use bait a lot, you know, and we drag big baits so we have bigger fish, you know, stripers. But once the water temperature hits below 42 degrees in the bay or the ocean, you're better off just staying home. You know, there's some spots around that you can, you know, and it's the truth. You know, there's some spots around that you can find that, you know, have warmer water, you know, and that warmer water is the same temp as it was during the summertime, so you don't change your techniques. But if I was freshwater fishing, then I use baits that need to be identical to the forage that the bass might be eating. If I'm on a lake and there's a lot of shad, and that shad's 2.5 inches, and they have a green back with a, you know, polka-dotted belly, you better believe I'm taking a Sharpie and polka-dotting that belly on whatever bait I'm using. I found, you know, using baits that match the size of the forage, you know, I do not downsize during the wintertime. And most people go, why? You've got to downsize. That's the only time that bass will eat. I mean, screw you. Bass don't want to eat a small little thing. Bass want to eat something that they can get the most out of. And then I use a lot of energy. So I'm going to slow down my presentation. I'm going to make it as erratic as I can. I'm not going to let it sit for very long. Like, I don't use jigs a lot of times. I just use a real erratic, snappy, because I don't want that bass to see it and go, ooh, that's a spinnerbait, or ooh, that's a lipless crank. I don't look at it and go, ooh, that's a dying shad. That's an easy meal. And that's what I'm going to go after. And that's how I work my wintertime cold weather thing. And surprisingly, I've had days where I've downsized and caught maybe one, maybe two mediocre bass. But when I went to a bait that was larger and matched what was in the lake, especially brim. If you have a lake full of brim and crappie, you know, and the average size is about 4 to 5 inches, which I find a lot in some of our lakes around here, I'll tear them up. I'll tear up 3-4 pound bass all day long. So, you know, I think that's more important than downsizing is use a bait that's going to match the hatch, you know, fly term, you know, match the hatch as much as possible, especially in the wintertime. You know, lighter leaders, lighter line, longer casts, but make it as erratic as you possibly can, and you'll be successful, guaranteed.
Yeah, there you go. Very cool. Let's see. There's that's something that's often asked of me when back at Handler is that you know what's biting? What are they biting on? You know, what's going on? You know, I've been throwing this and I'm not catching fish, but I was throwing it like 3 months ago and I was doing well. And you know, a lot of folks have to understand that things that you're using today are going to have to be different than what you used 3 months ago. Fish go through a transitional period in the wintertime, especially down here, where their metabolism changes, and it's not quite as quick as it was. So they can't eat very large meals like they could before. They're eating smaller things, like especially redfish on my coast. When you gut them in the slot size, you gut those fish in the winter, you'll find little tiny stone crabs and baby horseshoe crabs, and I've found dead seahorses in their bellies before, but very small, you know, very, very small prey items. So it's you know, the downsizing and going lighter and being a little bit more stealthy and all that kind of thing, that's all pretty relevant as far as what you should be looking to do. The biggest lure I'll throw this time of year is still going to be a 5-inch jerk shad, but I'm throwing that for, you know, a 40-inch fish that's laying on the bottom that's just sitting there laying still. He will move, you know, he'll go out of his way to eat it, but most of your slot-sized fish down here, you can catch on the small 3 or 4-inch paddle tail baits or the exude crabs that I like to use, and your fly assortment, it doesn't matter. Just the key is not to move it very fast, but something that's been going on over here on my coast lately has been a big wad of black drum have kind of moved in, and some guys have been able to get on them. And when I say a big wad of black drum, I'm talking a school of black drum of upwards of 100 to 200 fish, and they move up and down these different flats and kind of just work areas. But once they find a spot that kind of has a lot of food, they typically don't move from there. They kind of stay there for weeks at a time. So that makes it kind of easy to go back and target them. And I actually got an email the other day from somebody asking, you know, how do you target black drum or tailing black drum? And it's a good question. If any of you guys have found tailing black drum before, if you're trying to target them with artificials, it's pretty difficult. I mean, you can get them to eat gulp and some other things, but you know, for me, I've always done best with black drum with just natural bait, dead shrimp, and stinkier the better, or a quartered crab or something like that. But this winter, I've got a plan to try and tackle as many of them on fly as I can. And I talked to a guy who did quite a bit of this over the spring, and his tactic was using rattling shrimp, tying a rattling shrimp and laying it basically right on their nose. So you have to put it right on their face because their vision's pretty bad. But he says, man, and when you strip it, it's got to be so slow. It's like, if any of you guys have any experience in freshwater fly fishing, you know, sometimes you'll see guys that are real good at it. They'll use their fingers to kind of roll the line in their fingers to kind of move the fly. Rather than stripping, they just kind of like roll the line around in their fingers and drop it. It moves at centimeters, maybe an inch at a time, if that. And that's the kind of presentation you need to give a lot of these fish. And they're going to be in the same areas that you expect to find them. You know, for me, my planning stages so far have all been about finding the location, I guess, is the most important part. But with me planning on spending the entire day on the water, I plan on covering a whole lot of water. So, but I've already got an idea where I want to go. For me, the next step is what am I going to bring and what am I going to throw. The clothes and that kind of thing is all, you know, depends on the weather. But I will be wearing my set of waders just in case I want to get out and do some walking. But everything I'm going to bring with me is going to be small. I'm going to have nothing but paddle tails with those weedless hooks, no jig heads, because I want it to be super silent when it hits the water. I'm going to have a really good selection of flies brought with me, and then my fly rod as well. I've got a little thing that some folks might not think about. The product Hot Hands is a great thing to have when the water's cold. When you're releasing fish and stuff like that, your hands get real chilly or whatever. Just pop one of those Hot Hands in your pocket and, you know, warm yourself up real quick. And then, you know, obviously plenty of liquids, and this particular weekend's going to be of the adult variety, I think. Mixed with quite a bit of H2O, which is added into the adult variety beverage. So it's kind of convenient. But
hey, Chuck.
Yeah.
Guess what I just got in today?
What?
4 brand new live target mullets.
I don't like you.
They are so pretty.
I hate you right now.
I've got pretty much one of each. The pinfish and the walking, the twitch, the wake, and oh, I got 2 wakes. Sorry.
Wow. Thanks.
I love my wife.
post the link in the chat room for the guys in the chat room to that particular product, which I believe is a sponsor of the Fishing Florida Radio Show. Are they not, Steve or Mike? I think they are. At least they got their little emblem on their webpage. Live Target Lures, check them out. They're probably the most realistic hard baits that I've ever seen. So, yeah, kudos to Mark for rubbing it in my face. Appreciate it.
Anytime, buddy.
Yeah, man, no problem. I got a fellow Virginia Beach goer on the line. And I'm sorry you've been sitting on hold for about 5 minutes. Who am I talking to?
It's Lozier. What's going on?
Oh, Lozier. The hell with that. Yeah. You're down here in Florida, man. You're a Floridian this week.
Man, you guys in your Florida, all it does is blow and rain down here. Come on, dude. That's all it has been doing down here.
I haven't seen
this much crappy weather since, I don't know when.
Yeah, it's...
Sideways.
Yeah, it's been horrible, man. But rain, sleet, snow, I don't care. Sunday I'm spending sun up to sundown out on the water, so it can rain all
good
it wants to. It can rain all it wants to. I got scupper plugs.
Yeah.
So you got to make it down here and fish with me. I got to come up there and get you, or we got to figure something out, get you a taxi cab or something, man. We got to make it happen.
No, definitely, dude. We're like working like 7 days a week right now trying to get ready for our little Christmas break. But when I get back from that, I am definitely going to make it down your way, and we'll get on the water together. I'll bring
Sweet.
Some goodies with me. Have you got any of your packages yet from me?
I haven't that I know of. I didn't check the mail today. I was kind of in a hurry to get back to the house, but I appreciate that.
Cool deal. But yeah, I'm definitely planning on doing something with you once, like I said, we're just trying to get as done as we can before we go home for Christmas for a long week, so.
Yeah, good,
I'll
man.
Be ready.
Oh, I'm sure you're ready to go right now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so the wind's blowing, it's been raining, you're right, the weather right now is horrible, which kind of leads into the next thing I was going to get into would be, and Rob Choi just joined us in the chat room, let's see, oh, the next thing I was going to get to was going to be the how to find the fish in adverse conditions when you're limited to time on the water in the wintertime. Because sometimes it does blow and sometimes it does rain in the winter and the water's cold and the air's cold and it's miserable, but you still want to go fishing and you can't really sight fish because you can't really see anything. So how do you know where those fish are going to be laying and, you know, that kind of thing? The other day when I was paddling the Cuda around for the first time, I was spooking shrimp out of the water, just tons and tons of shrimp all up and down this one bar. Yeah, bloop, 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 bloop. We talked about that. Yeah, thanks. And that's horrible. you got me, man. You got me, man. Now I totally lost my train of thought. Anyway, so the shrimp were popping everywhere, and it was right on the edge of a relief near a flat, and there was some big mullet working in the area and stuff, and I knew that that there should be fish there. It made sense that fish would be there with that much bait being in the water, the ease of getting into deeper water, and with the fact that the sun hadn't really broke through the clouds yet to warm the flat up, it just that's where they should be. I've found that, especially over here, the magic time of the day is right around 10 o'clock, and it doesn't matter if the sun's broke through the clouds or not. At right around 10 o'clock, it seems, stuff starts moving around, and you start to see the big row mullet kind of pushing around a little bit more, and you know, it's been good. You know, it's a good time to get out and find fish right there around that 10 o'clock spot. Most of what you're looking for, again, is going to be the telltale signs of anything, any kind of life moving around, especially the bait. You'll see shrimp pop across the surface. You'll see little like glass minnows and stuff kind of working across the surface, trying to get away from something. But those redfish are lazy this time of year, and they'll cruise up on that flat, and they'll just sit in kind of a big ball of them, and they'll all kind of tail around each other. I hope to get a bunch of really good shots of it this year with the camera, but we'll have, you know, anywhere from one to two, onesies, twosies, to like 50 or 100 of them, where they'll just be sitting there tailing all around each other, and it's the craziest thing you ever seen. But if that's not an option, if you can't see the tails for the wind or for the chop or for whatever, you know, the question is, how do you find those fish? You know, where do you still look in the same spots, or, you know, Mr. Becker, like, do you have any other way of locating fish by maybe, you know, past trips or whatever, or do you just kind of wing it and kind of fan cast until you find them?
No, I'm looking for what the rest of the environment's doing. If there are birds out there, looking for birds picking up the bait. If they're, you know, smaller birds are picking up the bait, or the pelicans are in there, chances are that something else is going to want to eat them too. You know, those are the big keys. Looking for the schools of mullet. You know, mullet are easy to spot when they jump. And the more that are jumping, the more they're there, the more they're active. So try and fish the edge of the schools of mullet. as they're moving. Fishing profiles a lot. You know, if I know what depth and what bottom the fish have been like in the last couple times I've been out, or I've heard that's what they're doing. Look for the environment that I hear they want to be in, and then try to find other features they may be keying on, like the school of mullet moving through, like the edge of the grass flat that where it drops 4 inches for 30 yards, and they're stacked up along that. Combine that with what the tide's doing. If it's an incoming, outgoing, look where the fish are going to be staging, or where they're going to be moving, or where they want to be next on that. So even if you can't see them and can't see to figure out where they are, chances are they're going to do something pretty similar to what they did the last time the environment was in that condition. And look for the spots where you think you can find them.
Yeah. One of the places that seems to always hold fish for me over here on our coast is the west side of Mosquito Lagoon, anywhere from the BioLab boat ramp area up to Holover Canal. There's a sandbar that kind of runs north-south that's about 300 or 400 yards off the bank, midway between the two. And it just seems to be a natural funnel where, you know, these big redfish will swim up onto a flat and kind of push across that bar and get into that flat back there where it drops. It goes from, like, say, 4 or 5 foot on the one side of the bar up to the bar, down to about 3 foot on the other side, and then kind of slowly, you know, shallows up as it gets closer to the bank. But you'll find that no matter what the sky conditions are, those fish, it's like a clock in their brain just triggers and tells them, okay, listen, I have to go and get over here because this is where the bait's going to be. And I've never fished this particular area and not done well. It's always got fish in it. Now, I don't go out there and catch, say, 20 head of fish every time I go, but you know, I'll get a couple of really good shots at some good tailing fish, and then of course, you know, while you're looking for tails, you might be fan casting. You always pick one or two of them up that way too. But so areas like that might be kind of protected a little bit from the deeper water too, because something else that we have to deal with, or not we don't have to deal with, but the fish here have to deal with in the wintertime, is the porpoises. We get a huge influx of porpoises in the wintertime in the intercoastals and up in the lagoon. And when the water's clean, like it will get, those redfish and trout just don't stand a chance if they're in deep water. So it's kind of like a refuge for that, but it's also a breeding ground for everything they're eating, all those crustaceans, all the snails and the things that are crawling across the bottom. So that place, and then also to north of 42, Beacon 42 in the Mosquito Lagoon, and then over on the riverside up around Patilla Creek is decent. I've caught some fish in there in the wintertime, but north of that around Turnbull is a great spot. So if any of you guys are coming over here to this coast and you're looking for, you know, a real quick reference point, any of those places would be good. Over in the Canaveral National Seashore, there's a spot called Eddy Creek. That's a good place to launch from because you have kind of the best of all scenarios. You've got some spoil islands. You have some deep water holes. You've got really shallow grass flats that are all around you. So, you know, I try to kind of, I guess, pattern these fish early in the season. Like right now, I consider this early in the season. And I'll go out and I'll try and, like, locate a couple schools and kind of work them for a couple days in a row if I can, or at least, you know, once or twice a week. And once you kind of get a hang of what they're doing, as long as you don't divert from what you had been doing, you should find fish all winter. They're all creatures of habit, man. They tend to do the same thing every single day, especially the black drum, but the redfish too. Rob, what do you do over there to find fish? What do you look for as far as bottom contour or water depth, or, you know, any of that kind of thing?
Well, probably the best thing, the best case scenario that you can look for, conditions wise and stuff like that. Excuse me. Is negative low tides in the wintertime. Okay. Now, I know you don't have to really contend with tides over there too much, but it really affects stuff over here. And in the wintertime, when you get those negative low tides, now imagine this. Imagine Mosquito Lagoon. You know how it's only like a foot deep through most of it. And then you got those, like, I call them holes, you know, those, it'll get drop off to, you know, along the shoreline or something, and it'll be 3 or 4 feet deep, right? And we have the same sort of stuff here, except on negative low tides, that stuff is almost dry around those holes. So if you can, if you know where those holes are, chances are those are going to hold fish, because that's a place where they're just going to hang out until that tide comes in and they can get out of there. Otherwise, they can't. They're done. They can't go anywhere. They're stuck there. And just naturally, a lot, those are really good wintertime spots to look for. Is those you know, pools? It'll be anything from the size of a, you know, your backyard swimming pool to an Olympic sized pool. And I find that the you know, and it might be a foot and a half, 2 feet deep inside that hole. And, you know, basically they're just going to be laying in there waiting for the tide to come in. That's going to warm up quick, too. It's going to warm up a lot faster. I find in the wintertime when you get around deep water, it typically is a no-brainer. It's a no-go on the deeper water stuff, because that water is going to stay colder longer unless you're close. So definitely look for the pools in the shallow water. And a lot, nine times, grass. It's almost like a grass flat, except it's going to hold water through that negative low tide. It can
cool.
be sandy. It can be, you know, oyster bars around it, you know, whatever. Anything it's going to, and it's basically like shooting fish in a barrel, you know, because chances are at negative low tides, they kind of tend to last a while. So those fish are going to be in those holes for a while. So they're probably going to be hungry. So chances are when anything you throw in there is going to get destroyed. So that's the kind of stuff that I look for.
Yeah, that's good stuff, man. Good advice. Yeah. one of the things I'm definitely going to try and do this winter too, is explore some areas outside my comfort zone. About an hour or so north of me, in the lagoon, there actually is a tide change, and a very significant one at that. And there's a lot of oysters, and there's a lot of the things that would be more familiar to you over there, up a little bit further north, because you have Ponce de Leon Inlet, which is up there, and when that tide flows out of Ponce, it pulls so much water, it actually really does affect the north end of the Mosquito Lagoon quite a bit. And the salinity level is a lot higher the further north you go. You start finding a lot more baby grouper and that kind of thing the further north you get from where I'm so used to fishing. So definitely going to try and put some time in up there and fish those tide changes. Let's see, Wheeler. Wheeler, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man. I'm here.
What kind of areas are you looking for besides, you know, your typical stuff you look for in the spring? I'm sure you're looking for different areas to find fish or what kind of...
You know what? To be truthfully honest with you, I fish the same areas.
Really?
The reason for that is my technique, I'll flip and pitch, you know, stuff like that where you're right up against the shoreline. But a lot of my techniques are power fishing techniques. Look at KVD, look at Iaconelli, look at any of those guys when they're bass fishing, per se. And they're sitting, you know, way back, and they are bombing that bait into the shoreline. And I've caught a lot of fish in past years where they were 2 feet off the shore in, like, a foot and a half of water in January. So, you know, and I'll sit there and I'll bomb the bait. Like, I love using big spinner baits this time of year. The big Colorado blade, you just take that thing and you bomb it in, I mean, right in the shoreline, and just slowly just roll it back, twitch it every couple of, you know, turns. And what I'm looking for is those spots where you can feel the bottom and you feel it rolling, and all of a sudden you feel it drop off real fast. and I'll stop for a second and just let that bait fall. And it might be a 6-inch, you know, little hole, but there'll be a bass sitting right on that edge. They see that thing fall, and I'll slam it. Fishing points, secondary points. Bass want to try to stay as comfortable as possible, so they'll ride up and down that water column, and I'm looking for the easiest transition for them to stay close to structure, you know, bottom contours, boulders, rocks, stuff like that. You know, get, you know, figure out where they're going to be, and then you can pick them off all day long, you know, with the little thing. Plus, I can't stress this enough, if you don't believe in sensing your baits, you're not catching fish, as many fish as you can. Scent up your baits a lot. I every other cast, I'll throw some more, you know, smelly juice on a bait, because it's surprising how many fish you can catch with the smelly bait. So that's just me.
Yeah, no, that's good. I do the same thing down here with the crab invitations that I use, the exudes. I'll take any scent product that I just should so happen to have laying around, and fill about half of the bag with that scent. It's a little excessive, but I leave the bag out to kind of ferment and get really nasty. Procure is a good one. Mark Lozier, thank you. BioEdge, Procure, Lunker Sauce, any of those, but I'll leave them literally out in the sun for days on end, and then you know, when you go to use it, it's about the rankest thing you've ever seen. But I feel that the bait really absorbs that scent real well the longer you leave it out. I think when the bag heats up, that bait tends to get real soft. And when it cools off in the evening, it kind of hardens a little bit back up again. And I feel that it just traps that scent a little bit better. But the crabs, man, I can't tell you how many times I've blown a cast, you know, throw over to an area and just to watch, you know, the wind catch the crab and blow it like 10-20 feet away from my target, and you know, crab hits the bottom, and you just kind of like watch, and the tail drops, and you'll see a push just kind of like all like immediately start making its way over towards that area. And it's funny because sometimes you can actually sit back and watch and see the and see the fish kind of searching back and forth, making almost a grid, trying to find that scent that he smells. And I could tell you that all three of those brands work real well. And I've watched redfish, you know, go out of their way to try and find a bait that I've set out on the bottom. And I don't dead stick a lot, but that is one trick that you can do when you can't see them, or even if you can see them and you blow the cast, don't just reel back in again real fast and try and make another cast. Just leave it there for a minute and see what happens. But you know, another cool trick too. If you take the potion or the oil from I think it's BioEdge makes the oil rather than like the gel kind of stuff. If you squirt a little bit of that on a lightly wind blown surface, it'll slick it right out like glass, and you can see down inside that water a little bit better. It creates like a sheen across the glass, and I mean across the surface, and kind of gives you a little bit more visibility. I've done that quite a bit out of the kayak when, you know, I'm on fish and I know they're real close to me, but I can't see them to kind of pinpoint them. I'll just kind of do like a quick squirt across the surface, and, you know, it works real well. Plus, it'll bring some of them in, you know. And chumming's not a bad idea. You know, there's no reason why you can't chum on the inside. You don't have to be offshore to chum. We've talked about that on one of my shows before, that it's one of my favorite ways to find or to hold, you know, big groups of fish. You know, if you know there's a school of reds in the area, you take, you know, a dozen or so finger mullet and cut them up into little bite-sized pieces and just kind of throw them around wherever you're staked out at and just wait. You know, the catfish are going to show up and your stingrays are going to show up and all that kind of stuff's going to come, but, you know, it'll pull those reds in and it'll kind of keep them in that area for a while. Some of the really well-known captains that fish the lagoon and fish the river over here, it's a trick that they do that, you know, I've seen it a million times done, but, you know, try it. It'll work for you. I got someone calling in from 727 area code.
That's me.
Oh, it's you. What'd you drop? And yeah, okay, I see.
Yeah.
It. My bad. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I've got some areas I know. I've had buddies of mine recently fish, and they've been finding some fish there, and, you know, whatever. It'll be fun. But I love the wintertime, man. It's you don't have to wake up at ugly 30, as some of us like to call it, oh dark 30, and get out there before the sun's up and all that kind of crap. You can kind of take your time and make your way out there. So I see Scuba Stan in the chat room said he wants to see a CUDA. He's trying to decide whether he wants to buy a ride 135 or the CUDA. If you were down here, Stan, I'd be more than happy to let you use either one of my CUDAs, man. I'm telling you, and you guys know me well enough to know that I'm not that guy, but it's probably the best and most well thought out kayak fishing boat that I've ever been on. As far as everything that's on the vessel itself, and it paddles like a dream. It's super stable. I'm gonna have tons of video and pictures coming here real shortly on the boat. So hopefully you got a dealer up there, you can go check it out. But yeah, what else? Let's see. I got about 8 minutes already. That's crazy. What else? I don't know. What's going on with you, Rob? You got anything exciting coming up this week?
No, it still remains to be seen, and it's killing me because I want to. There's a new spot that I want to fish, man. It's like a smaller version of Weedon Island around here. So I just want to go over there and fish it, but it's like, you know, this time of year is kind of crazy because I got a lot of family stuff going on and stuff like that. It's like the only time of the year that I really have to do other stuff besides go fishing. I'm dying to, me and Keith were going out there Sunday, and I was kind of up late because I got a new Blu-ray player and a whole stack of Blu-rays for my birthday and stuff, and so I was up kind of late watching movies and stuff, and I said, well, you know, Keith will call me and that will wake me up and I'll, you know, be ready to go. Well, I didn't even hear the phone, and I ended up getting up at like 11 o'clock yesterday. So I kind of missed out on a fishing trip. But, you know, you'll have that. But this place, it's really, really cool. It's just oyster bar studded, and has a couple of deep little trenches running through it, and grass flats and all sorts of stuff. So it's and it's kind of protected from the wind, too. So it's kind of a cool ideal wintertime sort of spot.
Oh, cool.
So maybe we'll get to it this weekend. I'm not sure. The family's coming over. It happens that I have, like, I guess out of everybody in my family, I have the best oven. And it's going to be Christmas cookie making extravaganza at Rob's house. So, you know, I don't know. So it still remains to be seen. I don't know exactly what day that's going on or anything like that. I'm just I cleaned the oven this weekend. You know, those self-cleaning ovens are great. You just turn them on and they heat up to like 1,000 degrees and you just wipe them out, man. It's awesome. So I'm ready for that this weekend, but hopefully I can get out fishing.
Yeah.
I'm itching to go.
Cool. Mr. Becker, you planning on fishing?
Not entirely sure. Been lucky enough to get out both last Saturdays, and I'm hoping for this weekend as well. Had two good weeks in a row. Didn't get beat up. Didn't beat up on anybody. So we all had good days. So we'll see what shakes down. I've not looked at the weather yet, but we've been having the blowing 30 fronts coming through here on the West Coast to deal with. Last weekend, we got out, sun came up, everything was nice, and then clouded over very quickly and stayed overcast and windy. And I really thought the topwater bite would turn on a lot more than it did, especially since we were catching, you know, a bunch of dink trout and then got into some decent trout up to 24, some decent redfish up into the mid-20s. But very, very few of them on topwater. Most of them were on the bottom or on the drop. Actually, but they just didn't want the top water. I kind of figured with the overcast and the overall conditions, we'd do a little bit better on my favorite way to fish, which is top water, be it flies or artificials. So we'll see what the weekend brings.
Very cool. Well, and I hope you get out. I'm going to try. Like I say, I'm definitely going Sunday. I don't care if it's a hurricane blowing. I'm going. I'm going to try and sneak out one time prior to that for a short trip, just to kind of do a little bit of scouting. You know, I figure if I put, you know, better part of 13, 14 hours in on the water, I better catch something. If I don't, I'm just going to retire. I might donate all my stuff to, you know, you fine folks that listen to my show all the time. But, yeah, I don't know. Mark, are you, Wheeler, are you planning on fishing? Wow.
I am. My bad, man. I'm trying to do 20 things at once. but I will say this to Rob Choi, I apologize. If it's saying that we had a situation in the chat room, and I apologize, I didn't mean it. But I'm over it now. I will not be fishing this weekend.
He's so sensitive. He's so sensitive.
The deer whisperer.
The deer whisperer. one of my prouder moments. Anyway, I won't be fishing this weekend because my wife comes home in the next, 7 to 21 days. I'm not going to say what day in between there. But she comes home from deployment finally. I'll have a staying babysitter. So, you know, I will finally be able to, you know, go and fish without worrying about the kids or, you know, worrying about a babysitter. And plus I have a lot of stuff to do around the house before she gets home, so that way I don't have any honeydews. So I'm free and clear.
Well, man, I'll thank you. I'll be the first on here to thank you for your wife's sacrifice and your sacrifice that you guys make for us, man. That's awesome. I'm glad to hear she's coming home. That's good. Hopefully she'll stay home. Hopefully I won't send her back. So,
plus one. Thank you very much.
Oh, what's that, Becker? I didn't hear Becker. Oh, well.
I think he seconded your nomination.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did. I said plus one. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark Lozier, you're working all week,
yes,
aren't
sir.
You?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm working now. Working until I get home to go fishing. So I'll be doing a lot when I get home, I hope.
Yeah. Well, real quick, let me jump through a couple of things I didn't hit in the beginning. Do me a favor, guys, and take a look at tacklewebs.com. Mike Ortega, who's in the chat room, is the brains behind the Tackle Webs design. It's a cool tackle storage system. It works real well on kayaks. It'll fit behind most of the seats on the kayak, actually, you know, strapped to the back of the seat. If you don't want to, you know, use it there, I've actually put it across the back, the bungee section of my back storage, you know, behind me. It fits right there. Holds a couple Plano tackle boxes. You can put your leader wheels in there, pliers, whatever. Really cool product, and Mike's a good friend of the show here and good personal friend of mine. I appreciate any looks you guys can give them. Mosquito Creek Outdoors is partnering up with Fishing Florida Radio and Mudhole and Fish Hound and all kinds of other cool sponsors for a shad and crappie derby. So if anybody is interested in fishing the Coastal Angler Magazine Shad and Crappie Derby, December 17th through the through March 17th, 2012. So it's a good long tournament. Gives you plenty of time to get out there and catch your biggest shad or your biggest crappie, and you give away some really cool prizes. I'm going to talk with Jackson and see if I can't get them to maybe donate a kayak, because I think they're going to have a kayak division in the thing. So, but yeah, they've got all kinds. Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you, what body of water is that paddling festival at? Do you know, in February?
I think it's at Lake Apopka.
Okay.
I
didn't know if it was going to be at, like, Wakaifa or something like that.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure that it's at Lake Apopka, Let me see if it's on here. Let's check it out real quick.
That's okay. I know you're pressed for time. I just wanted to ask real quick.
Yeah, no problem. You can check out the Old Florida Festival. It's oldfloridaoutdoorfestival.com. That you'll have all the information that you need for tickets and all that kind of thing. You can check that out. But going back to the Shad and Crappie Derby, that should be a good time. Something I have never done is try to target Shad. I talk to a lot of my buddies who do it on fly, and they say it's a great time. I don't know. I guess, do you eat them? I don't know what you do with it, but whatever.
Egg.
The roe.
Oh, really? You
the
eat
roe.
The roe?
Well, I don't, but they do. You should come up by us then, dude. We do the James River to Shad on fly. It is awesome. You'd love it. Yeah, I just catch them and throw them back in. Yeah, they fight real poor man's tarpon. We call them up by us. They tail walk and everything. But, yeah, the old-timers keep them for the roe. They eat the eggs. They fry them, and I don't know what, but I just throw them back in.
Yeah,
those
are bait fish, man. I'll just throw them back. But, no, I'm looking forward to just fishing for them. I probably won't join into this the Shad and Crappie Derby because I just found out that I'd have to be in the pro division, I guess, because I've got the radio show and, you know, on pro staffs and whatnot, and I'm not fishing against professional crappie fishermen. Those guys have that stuff down pat with their 60 cane poles.
Spider rig.
Yeah, man, they get just crazy.
Spider rig.
Yeah, so. But, so that's going on. Let's see. Check out Florida Sportswoman. It's a really cool interactive web page that she's got, Brittany's got for all the lady anglers in the state. She's going to start up a ladies fishing seminars here in 2012. They're free. I know I'm going to be the guest speaker at one of them, so that'll be cool. Just check her out. Who else can I plug real quick? YakAngler.com. Please make sure to check out YakAngler.com for all things Yak Angler-ish. It's your ultimate kayak fishing resource. And with that, I think I'm pretty much done. I don't really have anything else to get to. Anything else from you guys? Mark, or Rob?
Nope.
No?
Not really,
man.
Cool.
Good job.
Yeah, man. Well, we'll call it an evening. I really appreciate you guys joining me, as always, live in the chat room and then on the radio as well. And you guys who call in, you make it a lot easier for me. Thanks again to the guys from Fishing Florida Radio. Had a great time. Hopefully I'll get to do that again here soon. And, you know, get out there, take a kid fishing, man. There's nothing in the world better than it. It definitely took the Scrooge for Christmas time right out of me, watching my boy catch that fish. So definitely do that, man. And be safe. Wear your PFDs. I just saw on Facebook that we may have lost another kayaker. I don't know if anybody else has seen that. It's going around. A gentleman who was
in Columbia River.
Yeah, Columbia River. Last seen possibly in the Columbia River on his kayak. They can't find him. It's a fun sport. It seems easy enough, but it's still dangerous all at the same time. And make sure you tell people where you are, man, where you're going whenever you launch, and you know, give people kind of a game plan when you're going to get back in case something should happen to you. They can at least hopefully save you or at least recover you anyways. Wow, I got real dark real quick, didn't it? Yeah, that's it.
Well, cool. Just to break the mood, we almost had a kayaker crossing Kipton Peak. We almost lost him. And luckily enough, we were able to, you know, thanks to the Coast Guard, got to him in time. And now he's, you know, recovering. So.
Wow. Yeah.
Very scary.
It could happen to any of us, man. I've been foolish the last couple of years not wearing a PFD while I'm on the water, and that's all going to change. I can't allow for me to anything to happen to me. You know, I couldn't. You know, it's just that's bad stuff, man. But cool. Well, guys, I'll be on the other shows. Tune in tomorrow night for Rob's show, Bad Cast. It'll be 8 o'clock Eastern. At Clearwater for all things Rob. Check him out at his blog, Rob of Badcastivore. And Wednesday night is Mark Wheeler, 8 o'clock. Thursday night, Chip Gibson. And Friday night is the Spike and Ike show. And with that, I bid you a good night. be safe, tight lines, calm winds, hopefully, and have a good holiday. See you guys.